Paul, would you mind leading us in a quick opening prayer? Thank you, sir. Okay, so Sunday, Paul took us through chapter 17. This is Jesus praying to God with the disciples in the upper room. And so here we are, we pick up in chapter 18. If I could get someone to read the first three verses, 1 through 3 of chapter 18. Okay, so this is the place, that Jesus had met with his disciples often. Obviously, it was also a place that Jesus was comfortable with because he goes there to pray before his eventual trial and crucifixion. What else can we infer about this place? It pretty much says it, but I'm just asking you. What else can we infer about this place? Well, as soon as you ask a question, you realize it's probably not a good question, so you're going to wait to see if somebody answers it, and then... If no, I get to answer it anyway. Yeah, that'd be fine, yeah, if you want to. So what we can infer from this place, and it says Judas, you know, knew the place, that Judas would know where to find them. I don't think we have any reference earlier, at least in John, that Jesus said they were going to go there, so Judas would have had to look for places where he would expect to find Jesus. So as we talk about, you know, this is a class about evidences for belief or why we should believe, why would this be important as an evidence to believe in Jesus? I may be stretching on this one, so I'll see if you can answer it. We studied earlier in John that, you know, Jesus said that he is giving his life, right? It's not being taken from him. So he clearly kind of went to a place where he could be found that was familiar. He wasn't hiding from anyone. Judas found it fairly easily. It doesn't talk about an all-night search for Jesus. So, once again, that's back in John 10, verses 17 and 18. Jesus had said, you know, he had the authority to give his life, and to take it up again. So the fact that this was a very familiar place, that he were there, that they were there, and Judas found them, just kind of goes to show, once again, Jesus is really in charge of kind of his giving of his life in this manner, right? So it's not being taken from him. And, of course, we also note, and once again, studying this stuff, you kind of learn things or you see things and the importance of them that you don't see before, but it's not just the Jews that come for Jesus here. They've coordinated with the Romans, and they clearly expect some sort of significant resistance as they talk about having a cohort and officers, etc. So they clearly expected some sort of resistance from Jesus or his disciples in looking for him. Any comments or anything? Okay. 4 through 9, if somebody could read verses 4 through 9.
Then Jesus, knowing all that would happen, then he came forward and said to them, "Who do you see?" They answered him, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus said to them, "I am he." Judas, who betrayed him, was standing. When Jesus said to them, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. So he asked them again, "Who do you see?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus answered, "I told you that I am he, so if you see me, let these men go." This was to fulfill the word that he had spoken, "Of those whom you gave me, I have lost not one."
Okay. Once again, in reading to prepare for the lesson here, and one thing stood out about this section. Jesus really took charge of this situation. This wasn't the soldiers and whatnot kind of happening upon them or peeking through bushes at some hideaway place. Jesus came out and met them, knowing full well what was going to happen. Jesus really came out and took command of the situation and asked the first question, started the interaction with those who were looking to capture. So I find that that's really bold of him to do and just kind of shows that he was in charge of the situation here. And of course, Jesus, when he answers their question about who they were for, he says, "I am he." Why did they draw back and fall to the ground? It seems kind of fairly an innocent response to the question. and answered them plainly as he had done most everything else in his time with those who questioned him. Why do we think that they drew back and fell? I'll stop answering my own questions for a minute. Yeah, Aaron?
My initial thought, contradicting what would be logical, to they were kind of afraid. Jesus is very fearful. But then, why would it be logical to take him by force? Also, because they're afraid of him when he said, so I don't really know. I always struggle with it to know exactly why they were afraid of something.
It never kind of drew my attention before either, you know. And like I said, they showed up at four, so they were they really afraid of whatever resistance was going to be there, right? Any other thoughts? Mike? Yeah, I think that's part of it for sure. The other thing that kind of comes to mind here is the response of I am he. It wasn't just an acknowledgement that he was Jesus of Nazareth, but Jesus of Nazarene, as they asked. It had to, I think, come across as more powerful. And the language here, he had said before, John chapter 8, verses 24 and 28, that Jesus, I am he, the one that saved people from sins, or would save them from their sins. And then in verse 28, that he was the Son of Man. And just in the same manner that God had told Pharaoh back in Exodus, I am, or I am who I am, I think that name of Yahweh or Lord or being the name of God may have been what also contributed to them kind of taking a step back and falling backwards. So I think his boldness and then that affirmation that he was exactly what they were accusing him of may have been very, very stark to them. And I think, Mike, you made the point also, you know, that of those who the Lord had given him, he lost not one. And so it's interesting that such in control was he that he was able to secure safe passage for those that were with him, right? So they didn't arrest everybody. They didn't take everybody. And this, of course, fulfilled what he had said prior in John chapter 10 and in John chapter 6, that he would lose nothing. So, okay. Other questions or thoughts? So this is, just as a side note, this is kind of the last time we hear of Judas in the book of John. You know, he's mentioned in the other Gospels, and of course I think we all remember what happens to Judas. He's filled with regret, distraught, and tries to return the money to the priest, takes his own life, according to Matthew 27. The priest didn't allow the money to go back into the treasury. So what do the priests do with that money, just as a side bit of interest here? Yeah, they bought a potter's field, and that potter's field, I don't know if anybody knows why it was called a potter's field, because basically they would strip out all the clay and use the clay for pottery, so it was already a field kind of with trenches and holes, and so it was actually kind of suitable for kind of easier burials. But the people that they buried in there, and the land was no longer usable for any other purpose, but the people that they buried in there were either poor criminals or strangers, and I find it interesting that as we've talked about Judas and the seeing that Judas would eventually betray Jesus, even all the way back from John 6, it was identified that Judas would do this. He was considered a stranger right at this point and buried in that potter's field. So it's a pretty fitting way to classify Judas. So, okay. Verses 10 and 11. Someone can read 10 and 11. So Peter, you know, seemingly always impetuous again, tries to defend Jesus here. Jesus tells him this is part of his plan to do the will of the Father. But interestingly, once again, if these Romans are expecting resistance, that even though a sword was drawn and someone was injured, that they still did, he was still able to leave. And so it just, I think, further reinforces that Jesus was in control of the situation and his leadership over the crowd or the group that was coming to get him. So, once again, just shows the power that he had here. Verses 12 through 14. So the Roman cohort and the commander and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him and led him to Annas first, for he was father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. Now Caiaphas was the one who advised the Jews that it was expedient for one man to die on behalf of the people. They took Jesus to Annas first. Why would they do that? Who was Annas? Annas is the former high priest. Annas was also seen as very influential, perhaps even in somewhat of some cohort with the Roman government or the governors there to maintain influence. Annas had, I think, 5 sons in the commentary I read. A son-in-law and a grandson would succeed him as high priest in that time frame. So Annas was a very influential person here and probably seen as maybe the most wise or the most senior of those who had been high priest, but not the current high priest, right? So 15 through 18. Someone can read that for us? 15 through 18. Okay, so they were in a court. This court was likely Annas' court. There's no indication they went to Caiaphas or after they brought him to Annas that he went somewhere else at this point. Peter had trouble getting in. Right. So any idea what, if you were in Peter's situation, what effect might that have had on you? And Peter wasn't by himself either, but Peter couldn't get in and he clearly wanted to follow. What effect might this have had on Peter? Discouraging? Okay. What else? Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, so disappointed he couldn't get in and follow, probably somewhat disappointed it was a scene had to be made, or he had to make special requests for him, so attention got called to him. Certainly nervous. Wasn't known to the people there, or as we read, he was known for maybe a reason he didn't want to be known for at this point. he was left behind at some point in trying to get in. So I think there's clearly likely some feeling that he's concerned about his safety. He's on guard. He's on edge. In this place right near where Jesus was being held. So, and the story interlaces, so we go back and forth between kind of what's going on with Jesus and what's going on with Peter. So verses 19 through 21, back to talking about Jesus. Can someone read that, 19 through 21? So Jesus doesn't fully answer Annas' question here either. He doesn't mention his disciples at all, which is another way that he protects them. But he answers clearly to the way he's gone about his teaching. Even in the last week in Jerusalem, as in months prior, he had been there. He was in the temple. He was in the synagogues with boldness and conviction about who Jesus was, about who he was. But what else does Jesus not do here from a legal sense in terms of his response to Annas? What does he not do? He doesn't really answer the question, and in doing so, he doesn't incriminate himself on anything here. He knows there are those in the room, all the other priests or leaders, that would be more than willing witnesses as to what he had said. So, and he doesn't back down from anything that he said, but he doesn't incriminate himself either. So it's this response to the high priest that kind of earns him the treatment we'll read here in verse 22. So someone could read verses 22 through 24. Okay. So clearly Jesus' response to Annas was a challenge to him, and how he was conducting the inquiry. He wasn't going to incriminate himself, but you know, Jesus really wasn't wrong here either. In Israel, it wasn't really sound procedure to have an accused person incriminate themselves, especially since he had done all his teaching publicly. Many of those who heard him teach or heard him say those things were present, and could be called upon as witnesses. So he really kind of asserted his right not to incriminate himself, and he got slapped for it. In those proceedings, actually, we read about Paul in Acts 23. Had he actually kind of insulted the high priest or the judge or a ruler, that would have been cause for contempt of court or cause for some sort of punishment or whatnot. But Jesus didn't do that here, so there was really no justification at all for what the jailer did. He called him out for it. And so this inquiry ended seemingly either unfruitful in getting any incriminating evidence from him or to incriminate himself or any information about his disciples. So staying there became pointless. And so he had to go to Caiaphas. Annas was not the high priest at the time, so he could not have brought him forward to the Roman governor. That had to be done by Caiaphas himself. So there he was sent. So questions coming? Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that's something that most, if any, other man could have accomplished, right? Absolutely. An incredible amount of restraint and letting what was going to happen take its course without intervening or trying to defend himself out of that situation. Absolutely. That's a great point. Just that we continued not meeting the expectations of even those closest to him in any way, in a stretch or form. Paul.
When Jesus says, if what I said is wrong, bear witness about the wrong, but if what I said is right, why did he strike me? He doesn't retaliate physically, but he does force them to at least acknowledge that they've done a wrong by striking him. So I think maybe something.
Right.
And when we do that, we're being like.
Sure. Yeah. And Paul in Acts, I can't remember exactly where it was. Acts 23, Paul shouted an insult, a whitewashed wall, I think is what it was, to the judge, right? And then he did apologize, knowing that was something that was going to get him in trouble. So Jesus didn't enter into those. He didn't take it to that level, but he didn't necessarily sit and get trampled upon either, right? The mic.
One thing that Josh kind of made me think about, something that I heard one time, and I think it fits here. Peter's problem wasn't that he wasn't willing to die for Christ. Peter's problem was that he wasn't willing to live. It's very easy at times, I think, to put ourselves out there whenever it's happening, and there's, you know, the things are on the line. But in the everyday courses of life, our our life every day when we're going to work, going to school, or doing whatever it is that we're doing, are we willing to live that life for it? That doesn't take passion, but that takes extreme amount of faith. So to me, whenever I look at Peter, I think that's an example. That's something that I take.
Yeah. And it's easy to be passionate about, certainly if it's a direction you want it to go, right? And this isn't going in the direction that Peter clearly wants it to go at all. Great point. Yeah, bye. Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. Other thoughts or comments? Great stuff. Alright, we exhausted them. Okay. Verses 25 through 27. If someone could read 25 through 27. Okay, so once again, we've interlaced the Peter and Jesus stories here going on likely at the same time. And so here it is where Peter has now denied Jesus three times. And as Josh mentioned, this was just hours ago where the most zealous of the disciples in the upper room was told he would deny Jesus. And so it may not have even been more than 6 hours ago, and they've been up this whole time. So or they've been together this whole time. So I can just imagine the shock of this moment for Peter as this rooster crowed and he realized what he had done. And once again, another reason to believe, right? Because once again, Jesus' prophecy here or prediction statement came true, right? And so we're kind of at the point in this chapter where there's just as much kind of going backward that Jesus has said that's kind of being fulfilled as still things to come. That was, I feel like a lot of what we've talked about is maybe forward, but this is where you kind of forward and backward in terms of the things Jesus has said that are kind of proof for belief here. So, okay. Verse 28. Then they had led Jesus from Caiaphas into the praetorium, and it was early, and they themselves did not enter into the praetorium so that they would not be defiled but might eat the Passover. Anything ironic here about the Jews just in reading that? Yeah. So they're more than willing to kind of be morally unclean by leveraging or whatever they're doing here to try to manipulate the Roman governor, Pilate, or the Roman justice system. But if we can't step in that building because we might not be able to eat the Passover tonight, right? And there's a little bit of a double standard here. It is very ironic. And once again, you know, we'll read here in a minute that you know the Jews, at some point, when the Romans took over, took away their ability to execute capital punishment. And the Jews will say this here in a minute, but there was one circumstance where the Jews could execute capital punishment. And does anybody know what that was? Yeah, the defiling of the temple, or someone who violated the sanctity of the temple. And in that case, there was no reason for them to have to go seek any other permissions or any other authority. As a matter of fact, even if it was a Roman who violated the sanctity of the temple, they could put that Roman to death. Do we know anybody who was actually accused of that? Paul was? Right. Yep. Anybody else? Stephen? This is exactly what Stephen was accused of and what led to his death. So, okay. We'll read verses 29 through 32. Someone can read that for us. 29 through 32. Okay, so the Jews don't really answer Pilate's question about what they're accusing him of. And given the Roman soldiers being involved early, it's likely that Pilate had some sort of knowledge of what they were doing, but he just doesn't give them any leeway here. He wants to ask him, and apparently in study, Pilate doesn't have a rich history of doing anything in favor of the Jews here, so not too friendly or considerate. So this dismissive response from him makes a lot of sense. We talked about this a second ago, but then we didn't necessarily mention it. What was the method of capital punishment the Jews used? Stoning, right? So you all remember the Stephen being stoned, which, once again, until the Jews lost their ability to execute capital punishment, this was also the punishment for blasphemy, which is what they're accusing Jesus of. So, interesting when it says here that to fulfill the word of Jesus which he spoke, signifying by what kind of death he was about to die, it was actually against Jewish law to hang someone alive. So when he spoke about the type of death that he would he was to suffer, back in John chapter 3, that he would be lifted up, or chapter 12, verse 32, lifted up from the earth, it was notable that he knew it would be done by crucifixion, which is something the Jews couldn't actually do to him, right? So it wasn't just that they couldn't kill him. They wouldn't have killed him in that method either. And so the Jews couldn't have accomplished that, so I think, once again, another reason that Jesus all-knowing and ability to kind of see what was coming and have knowledge of those things. Questions, comments? Okay. So we'll read starting in verse 33. Therefore, Pilate entered again into the praetorium and summoned Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Are you saying this on your own initiative, or did others tell you about me?" Pilate answered, "I am not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests delivered you to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would be fighting so that I would not be handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm." Therefore Pilate said to him, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say correctly that I am a king. For this I have been born, and for this I have come into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" Okay, so now we know, even though the Jews didn't say it earlier, the accusation is clear that Jesus is claimed to be king of the Jews. Why would this have mattered to Pilate? Why did this become a matter for Pilate to intercede or get in the middle of? No, so exactly. Anyone who claimed kingship in a Roman province denied the sovereignty of Caesar and was basically guilty of rebelliousness. And so this was a threat to the Roman Empire. There were groups that resisted, and we'll find out here shortly as someone who was part of those groups that resisted. So the Jews were here manipulating Pilate to try and win him over to their side using this claim about being a king. Of course, Jesus explains, using their term for him, that his kingdom is not of this world. And how does he provide proof of this? Yeah, they didn't put up any resistance when they came to get him, right? So, despite Peter making the attempt to, and once again, Peter maybe not understanding the type of king that he was, right, or the kingdom that would be, but he provided proof that his people did not fight or resist when he was taken by the Jews. And the Roman soldiers would have been witness to this too. So actually, there's pretty strong evidence here. So by telling Pilate his kingdom was not earthly like other kings, even after being asked multiple times, he's able to defend himself against this claim leveled by the Jews and avoid any conflict with Roman law. And so Pilate ends the conversation. How does he end the conversation? What is truth? Right? It's kind of this dismissive, what is truth? What is what is that, right? Not, he was not going to, his matter was kind of judging the law, right? He was not going to get into some sort of philosophical debate, certainly about something that the Jews would have brought to him. So it just ended the conversation very quickly. What is truth? And moves on from there. So, sir. Absolutely. I think, who was the name escapes me. Who was the other Roman governor that Jesus was sent to at some point? Herod, right? Herod was actually looking forward to meeting Christ, hoping to see some sort of signs, right? So there was clearly knowledge ahead of time which supports the kind of the conversation about who Jesus was and what he was at least able to do from a work standpoint. Great point. Other thoughts or comments? Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. He certainly wasn't willing to engage in a more deeper discussion of this and whatsoever. And so, as John mentioned, he was, John or Mike, was arbitrating, look, his kingdom is not a threat to me, but just being king of the Jews by title and being king of the Jews, son of God, son of man, and that truth was a much bigger deal. And clearly, I think you're right, it was escaping. Well, Mike?
The other thing to consider is, based on the answer, back to the crowd, it could also be an acknowledgement that people that are judging you are not looking for the truth. And whenever you look at it, he goes out and says, there's nothing guilty in this man. They don't care. The very next comment they make is, you know, if you don't do this, you're no friend of Caesar. And whenever he hears that, truth out of him.
Right.
At this point, it doesn't matter if he's
right. Absolutely. Okay. We'll read the next couple, or the last couple of verses here of the chapter and finish up. So the second part of verse 38. And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, I find no guilt in him. But you have a custom that I release someone for you at the Passover. Do you wish then that I release for you the king of the Jews? So they cried out again, saying, not this man, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a robber. So once again, being no friend of the Jews, he said, do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews? Of course not. He just brought him in to have him executed. And so he was certainly, I think, tweaking the Jews there. He asked another answer. But here, an interesting note that I really never caught before. Barabbas is called a robber here, but there are other terms used to describe him in the Bible. Anybody know what one or two of those might be? Insurgent, whatever else? Insurrectionist? Yeah, or a rebel, or a bandit taking part in an uprising. Mark 15:7 says that among the rebels in prison involved with the resurrection, specifically here. And so robber is also the same word used for the two crucified on the cross with Jesus in Mark. So they could have been considered the same as Barabbas. So it's ironic here that Barabbas was exactly the type of person that the Jews accused Jesus of being, An insurrection is someone who's rebelling against the Roman Empire here. But yet here the Jews are asking for his release instead of Jesus. Right? So, and I find it also interesting that Pilate would actually release someone who had been convicted of this very thing, trying to be a friend to Caesar, versus someone who had only been charged and not yet convicted. Right? So, a lot of irony here in terms of what the Jews are asking for, what Pilate grants them. Neither one of them are really in the interest of the greater good here, but certainly to serve the Jewish leaders' desires. Other questions, comments, thoughts? Yes. Yeah, I mean, I don't know that the sword in reference there is actually meant to be a sword used for war, for bloodshed. Certainly, Jesus doesn't approve of Peter using the sword in that situation, even though the situation might have called for that in normal circumstances. So, Aaron? That's what I would have, in my uneducated mind, that's where I would have gone to. Brother Mike?
Going back to the early part of the chapter where Jesus goes into the garden, he crosses the brook Kidron. And it's interesting to me that the Bible deals in real places and real facts, real people. And this is an example of that because the Kidron Valley runs on the east side of the old Jerusalem. When you come down from Jerusalem like that, you're in the Kidron Valley. Then you go back up on Gethsemane, and all that's still there today, the same way. So when you talk about the brook Kidron, it just ran right through that Kidron Valley there.
Right.
It's all just like that today. It's interesting that the Bible gives us the details.
Same thing with the Potter's Field, the field of blood that was purchased. Is there in reference to that?
Yeah. I think within the context, Jesus wanted and encouraged the disciples to defend themselves when he was not. But he didn't want them to defend him because it was his time. But I think he was talking about this within this context. There's a couple other areas in the Gospels where Jesus mentions
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.